So as I have said in the past, we're in the book of Mark throughout this campaign, and Mark is not one to use words. He uses them very sparingly. He gets to the point and moves on. And so when you get a story like this, you know, every little word, every detail is very important. And so you really have to kind of look, as they say, in the white parts, which is to say in the spaces between the words, to see, to kind of bring out that story and imagery. And so one of the parts of this story that I really love is that moment when the disciples take this boat across the shore on the Sea of Galilee, and there's this great storm coming up. And they look to Jesus, and he is asleep in the front of the boat, just all curled up like a little kitty, just on his pillow, just all curled. And you think, how does this guy? I mean, the disciples must have been like out of their mind. How is he sleeping? The boat is going up and down. There's lightning, thunder, roar, waves coming over the boat, rocking back and forth, and he's just. And I think at that moment, they had to make this decision, right? What are they going to do? Are they going to let him sleep, right? Because clearly he needs this sleep. This man who's doing all this work, who gets no rest. Or do they wake him up? And that really got me thinking. And what came to mind is, of course, choose your own adventure books. And for members of Generation X, this is always, if you ever see on the internet, they'll always have these things of like, here are 30 images for Generation X to remind them of like their childhood. And these books seem to always be in those lists. So they were books all written, there's like 185 of them, if you can believe that. And they were these very simple kind of adventures, and they took place in all different space and, in the Jurassic period and medieval times and the future, the past, all different periods of time. And what it would be told in the second person. Very few books are told in the second person, which is to say it was constantly talking to you. You find yourself in this room and you are in a cabin. And it is a summer, and your aunt has given you this cabin, and so you are there with your friends, and it's quiet, and then you hear a weird noise outside. Do you go and investigate the noise, or do you stay put in the cabin? And it would say, like, if you want to go investigate the noise, turn to page 68. If you want to stay in the cabin, turn to page 101. And so you would read, that's how you would read the book. You go to 101, and then that would give a result of that. And then there would be another decision that you would have to go back and forth. And so I sort of picture the disciples having to make this decision, trying to assess what would be the two realities. Because they know if they wake him up that, you know, he might be upset with them. But they know that if you keep him asleep, what are we going to do? This storm is so big. So but before we get into what they do, we need to do a little bit of background on this story. Now, this has been throughout this campaign, this series of Mark, we have been in two modes. There have been kind of modes of warning and danger that Mark has kind of given to us to sort of prepare the reader for the upcoming real danger that is going to come to Jesus and his disciples. And that is counterbalanced with images and messages of hope. And so images of danger like this, as the Pharisees were out and began to plot with the Herodians about how they might kill Jesus. So this happens very early on. This is the third chapter of Mark. Already they are plotting against him. Danger is coming. And then it talks about Jesus' family. When they heard about him, they said that he is out of his mind. And so this other sense that there were this other contingency, even of his family and people who were close to him, that said that he was crazy, that he didn't know what he was doing, he didn't know what he was getting into. There's this foreboding sense of danger. And finally, the last thing that I want to highlight to this is that the teachers of the law, they came down to Jerusalem and they made accusations against Jesus, saying he is possessed by Beelzebul. And so not only are the Pharisees after him, not only are the Herodians after him, but also these scribes are after Jesus as well. So there's this sense that Mark gives of foreboding of danger. But this also, we have seen many images of hope. One is the in Jesus' parable of the sower and the seeds, how some of the seeds, when they landed on fertile soil, produced great returns, as much as 100 times of what was sown. So their work is not going to be in vain. Jesus' work will not be in vain. Similarly, one of the other messages of hope is that as soon as the grain is ripe, he puts the sickle to it because the harvest has come. Remember, this was this image of this apocalyptic imagery of the sower or of God, or sort of this fatherly presence coming in, and when this harvest is ripe, coming to collect it all and take it with them. And then lastly, the kingdom of God is like a mustard seed. This is what we talked about last week, the hope of the mustard seed, about how it grows and becomes larger than any of the other plants in all of the garden, and how you can't stop these mustard plants from growing and spreading, and that is what the kingdom of God is like. So we have all this imagery, right? We have these two things that are constantly in play, images of danger, but also images of hope. And these two ideas, danger and hope, both come together in this story of the crossing over of Galilee. And there's a lot of symbolism in this story that I want to highlight. The first is the crossing itself. Now, there's a lot of kind of scholarly back and forth about which sea they were crossing, from where were they crossing to where they were going, and if that's where they ended up. Because Mark has a lot of geographical inconsistencies throughout the gospel, because Mark is really not concerned about the literal geography, I don't think, of what Jesus was doing, but rather the symbolism, what it meant to cross. And so at this time, it is indicated that Jesus and his disciples are going from one side of the sea, where they were reaching a lot of people who were Jewish, right, sort of in this Jewish community, over to the other side of the sea, which was known to be kind of the Gentile side of the sea. So they were going from one community into another community, from one place to another place. And in crossing, this idea was that they were bridging the gap between these two cultures. As you know, the Jews and the Gentiles, they were very separated at this time. And so by them going from one to the other, it's showing how the ministry is bridging the gap between these two cultures. Which is an interesting thing to think about when you think about our society today, and how socially we are very divided along a lot of different lines, whether they be racial lines or political lines or socioeconomic lines, that there are people for this group and there are people for this group, but there is not anyone for all of the groups. Even think about it politically, how separated we are with news stations and media outlets and ways of thinking and all of that, that there's this idea that there are people in this camp and that there are people in this camp. And kind of trying to create a bridge in between them is impossible, difficult, right? It can happen also not just socially, but also personally. It can happen to us within our very selves. Think about having to try something new, going outside of your comfort zone. How difficult that can be. Being very comfortable in one place with doing one type of thing, and how different it would be to think or act or understand a different way. Bridging those things, getting out of your comfort zone, can be very difficult, very challenging. It can be that way with relationships as well. Trying to mend a broken relationship. Trying to just navigate complicated relationships, particularly with family or long-standing friends, where there is separation. Making a bridge in that gap is difficult. And so, as that work is made, as the traveling from one to the other side, from trying to bridge the gap between these two disparate places, there is difficulty, right? And that is what the disciples and Jesus faced on the Sea of Galilee. That is the storm. This is the difficulty that they faced. Going from a Jewish culture to a Gentile culture was very difficult, nearly impossible, as was their literal journey on the sea. It was difficult, if not impossible. The storm had risen up. Now, the storms were not a new symbol to Mark. In fact, the storms and the sea as a symbol of chaos was something that has been around almost as long as scriptures themselves had been around. The idea of the sea as being stormy, as being chaotic, was something that you see throughout the Hebrew scriptures. Think about the story of Noah. How it was the sea that caused all of the chaos and destruction. Think about the story of Jonah, of which this story has a lot in common, including the protagonist being asleep. How that sea was the chaos and the unpredictability and the power that was there. It's represented throughout the Psalms. I particularly like this psalm from Psalm 107, talking about all the different ways in which people encounter challenges. And starting at verse 23, Psalm 107 says, "Some went out to the sea in ships. They were merchants on the mighty waters. They saw the works of the Lord, His wonderful deeds in the deep." Wonderful meaning powerful and literally full of wonder, unbelievable. "For He spoke and stirred up a tempest that lifted high the waves. They mounted up to the heavens and went down to the depths in their peril. Their courage melted away." Perilous journeys, all marked by challenges that might seem overwhelming. This is what the people in these stories of storms faced. Tasks that seemed impossible. This is the kind of thing that we might face as we try to build bridges where there is separation. Tasks that might be impossible. And during the difficulty, we might feel like we are overwhelmed. Like we are maybe even drowning, looking for a lifeline. And that is where we find our disciples as they are trying to decide what to do. As they are deciding how to choose their own adventure. Do they wake up Jesus? Or do they let Him sleep? Well, they decide to wake Him up. Of course, because the disciples, anytime they have a problem, they go, "Jesus, Jesus, help us. Help us. We don't know what we're doing." And Jesus, who, I like what Carol said, this is after a long day. And all Jesus wants to do is get some sleep. If any of you have children or just a time where you have been woken up, when you have really needed sleep, you can kind of put yourself in the place of Jesus. It's the summertime, so we've been doing a lot of swimming in our household. And nothing gets you to sleep quite like a swim sleep. You know, you've been swimming all day in the sunshine, and you got the chlorine and the water in your eyes, and you're exhausted, and you hit the pillow, and it's like you're out. That's the kind of exhaustion I imagine Jesus having in order to be able to even sleep through this. And then these disciples are waking him up. And Jesus calms the storm. First thing Jesus does is he says to the storm, quiet or silent. Be still. Be at peace. And Mark uses these words of Jesus very intentionally because these are the same words that Jesus tells the very first demon that's exorcised in Mark. To be quiet. To be still. And the response is also the same. As the people in the synagogue that day saw Jesus rebuking the demon, they said to each other, "Who is this guy that even the demons listen to him?" And in the boat, the disciples turn to each other and they say, "Who is this guy that even the storms listen to him?" Though Mark uses very few words, he uses them very carefully. So if the sea is chaos, if the sea is unpredictability, then what does God represent? Where is God in this story? Well, I think that God is in the order. Because I think as you look through the Hebrew scriptures, as you look through what Jesus is doing in all of these stories, it is bringing a sense of order to chaos. Bringing a sense of divine order. Look at the story of Noah. How there was the chaos of the storm. But after the storm, God is present in the rainbow, in the covenant that it is made to with humanity. A covenant that is designed to never have this chaos erupt again. From the chaos that is in Jonah, of the storm and the tumult. Order was created once Jonah was on the path that God had laid out at the beginning of the story. Once Jonah was in the order of God, order and peace was restored. And even at the end of the psalm that I just read to you, or the end of that section rather, it reads like this. Remember these the people that had were in peril and had lost all their courage. It says, "They reeled and staggered like drunkards. They were at their wits' end. And then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distress. He stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed. And they were glad when it grew calm. And he guided them to their desired haven." There's a lot that is similar to our story, right? Because what does Jesus say to the storm? Be quiet. Just as the Lord said in Psalm, that the Lord stilled that storm to a whisper. But there's also a difference. A subtle difference, but there is a difference between the psalm and the story, and that is the reaction. In the psalm, it says that the people that were there, they grew glad when it grew calm. That they were glad because their faith in God had been restored. They cried out to God because they knew that God would calm the storm. And when God calmed that storm, they were glad. Now, look at how the disciples reacted. Right? They cried out to Jesus, help, help, help. Jesus calms the storm. Does it say they were glad? No, it says, who is this guy? They were in disbelief. And it doesn't say at any point that they were glad, that they were calm. If anything, it almost seems that they were more anxious. They had more questions than they had answers. And that, I think, is why Jesus rebukes them for not having faith. It's not so much that they were afraid of the storm. I don't think that Jesus was trying to tell them that they should never have fear. I think Jesus was very clear, like, no, these are things that are fearful. These things that happen in our lives, the turmoil, the challenges, the scary things that happen, they create fear in us, right? Things that are awaiting for us that we don't know what's going to happen. That's not saying that we shouldn't have fear. Fear is a natural reaction to those things. But what Jesus, I think why he rebukes their faith is that they didn't have faith to know that God was on their side. That God could and would bring about peace. I think Jesus rebukes them because they were on the wrong side. They were on the side of fear. They were on the side of chaos. And Jesus wanted to bring them to this side of trust, the side of faith, the side of knowing that they were safe in God's hands. Because when there was faith, as the psalmist says, the people were glad. When there is no faith, there's nothing to rest their trust upon. When there's no faith, there's nothing to believe in, so all that is left is fear and anxiety. And so Jesus was trying to show them, even in the midst of the greatest storms that they would face, that if they called upon God, that God would be with them. And God is a God of order. God is a God of peace. And even if there was not peace around them, there would be peace within them. This was a very important lesson because from here on, things were not going to get any easier for the disciples. Going into the Gentile territory is equivalent to going into hostile territory. Things would be challenging. Storms would arise. They would not be able to guarantee their safety. But even if there was not peace around them, even if there was chaos around them, Jesus was telling them that they could have peace within them. So as we go through our lives, trying to bridge these gaps of difference, trying to go from a place of tumult, a place of turmoil, a place of difficulty, to a place of resolution, let us remember that even though we are in the midst of challenge, even though we are in the midst of the storm, in the midst of chaos, we do not have to have that chaos within us. For our God is a God of peace, a God that silences the storms, a God that reduces them to a whisper. So I invite you to remember that this is always with you. And so even if there is chaos around you, there can be peace within you. The people said, Amen.